Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Welcome to Mind Food Radio. On today's program, in a matter of minutes, Dr. Ross Walker standing by with some great advice on heart health. We've also got Carol Ireland joining us shortly, talking about epilepsy and Purple Day. Food allergies are on the menu again, as well as other great advice from our good friends to do with fashion and design. And our friend Carolyn Etting, who will be joining us live on the program from New Zealand, will be filling us in on the world of modern femininity and the new way that we've got to wear clothes. Of course, our personal trainer Jenny Wood joins us, and Michelle McHugh will be standing by with some Easter treats for us right here on the program Mind Food. Thank you for joining us. Let's get underway.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Hi, Dr. Ross.
Hello, Michael. Hello, Ben.
How are you going?
Oh, fantastic. Thank you.
Now, you've got some really interesting thoughts in this book, but also, I guess, a lot of the work that you have experienced across your life as a doctor has really helped and, I guess, informed a lot of your thinking in and around this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been doing this job for 30 years, and so I'm trying to put my 30 years of medical practice into the book. And I think it's really important that we don't just focus on the medical side of things. I think it's also important, of course, to focus on the emotional and spiritual side of our body. So I think it's getting balance in your physical side, in your mental side, how you think, in your emotional side, how you feel, in your spiritual side, having a purpose in life. And I think that's really, really important. But in the chapter Health by Decades, what I talk about is that it's a bit overwhelming to do five or six things at once. So it's better to focus on something that really suits that decade of your life. And so, for example, in the 20s, many people are focused on how their body looks rather than how their body feels or what are the good health things to do. So I say that the decade of the 20s is the decade of exercise. So it's when you develop an exercise habit that should stay with you for the rest of your life.
What if you don't have that, though? What if you come from a background or a family or, you know, you perhaps didn't go to a school that the focus was on exercise or sport? How do you develop that?
Well, I think one of the big points I make in the book and in my work generally is the second best drug on the planet is 3 to 5 hours every week of exercise. And so I think we all should be exercising if we're able-bodied. I think it's important to get out there and have some sort of exercise habit. So I just think it's a matter of discipline. So even if you don't like exercise, what I say there is to do the most boring form of exercise whilst you're doing something else. So up to 4 or 5 years ago, I was playing soccer and squash, and I've completely destroyed my right knee, so I can't do high-level exercise anymore. So what I do is sit on an exercise bike in front of the television and just watch DVDs. I've got this addiction to the American TV series The West Wing. Go for a walk with your partner. I mean, that's a wonderful thing to do, and you can do a thing called talking when you're walking.
That's
with
unusual in today's world.
Yeah, you can build a relationship.
Communication.
It's not a bad thing. So get into some sort of exercise habit, and 3 to 5 hours a week of testing exercise is what you need. You need to feel a bit tested by it, so a bit short of breath, a bit sweaty, and you know you're getting good cardiovascular fitness, and it helps you burn fat. So that's the decade of the 20s. Decade of the 30s is the decade of bad habits. So that's the decade where you look at what your bad habits are. Are you smoking? Are you drinking too much grog?
Yeah.
Are you, hopefully no one's doing this, but are you using illegal drugs? And say, look, we can't keep doing this because it's really going to knock our bodies around. Because I can assure anybody listening that if you get into your 40s and 50s and start thinking about these things, it's probably too late. So when you get to your 30s, you're no longer immortal, because most people in their 20s think they're bulletproof. And start thinking about that smoking habit or that excessive drinking habit and get rid of that. That's the decade of the bad habits. So when you get into the to 40, and again, this is a big theme through the book, is that our bodies are only designed to work well for about 30, 40 years, then have our head ripped off by that saber-toothed tiger or die of some infection. So you get into your 40s, and in your 40s, that's the decade of metabolism. That's where the metabolism starts to slow. So if you don't really cut back on your food, you find that the weight starts to accumulate around the belly. So then the decade of the 60s and beyond is what I call the decade of the mind. Because there's that wonderful saying, use it or lose it. And unfortunately, we're seeing people now who get into their 60s and 70s and start to think, oh, I can slow down now. But as they slow down, they're not using the brain as much, and so things wear out. Read good books, do the crosswords, the Sudokus, have interesting, intelligent conversations, be open to change. Don't be pessimistic. Ronald Reagan once said, tonight's a very special night for me, but at my age, every night's a very special night. I think that's the attitude you've got to have. Life is precious. Learn to live in the moment and enjoy every moment. One of the greatest philosophers ever, a fellow by the name of Hugh Hefner, said that life's a journey and the destination's death, so you better enjoy that journey.
Great advice. And listeners, I can't recommend Dr. Ross's new book enough. Five Stages of Health. Dr. Ross, thanks for being on the show.
Great to talk to you.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
And now we're going to be chatting about epilepsy. It's one of those words that we hear a lot of, but what are the symptoms and what's Purple Day? So we thought we'd get our CEO, Carol Ireland, on the phone. And she is certainly not sitting on an island. She's heavily in the thick of all the organising and getting ready for this wonderful day called Purple Day. Welcome to the program, Carol.
Hi, Ben. Certainly not sitting on an island.
Not on an island. Now, epilepsy, can you just run us through what are some of the things that you might look out for and how you get diagnosed for this first?
Look, epilepsy is a very complex condition. It's a seizure disorder, and it can affect anyone at any time, so it doesn't matter what age. You can actually have a diagnosis of epilepsy. It's quite complex, though, because there are so many different kinds of seizures, and about 40, and they range from the ones that most people know and are portrayed in the media, you know, where people literally fall down, lose consciousness, shake, and so on. But then there are more subtle forms where people, they're called absent seizures. People kind of blank out for a little period of time. Or there are others where the person's not aware of what they're doing, but they appear to be chewing and mumbling and, you know, making fidgety movements. It's just such a complex condition.
Is it like, does it have a symptom like a heart attack, or it just there's no pain, or is there pain? I'm not sure.
It's not pain so much. It varies from person to person. Some people actually get some sort of a warning. You know, they might get an aura, some feeling. It might be a feeling in their tummy. You know, they're just feeling a little unwell. So some people will know there's a seizure coming on. Others won't. They'll have no idea whatsoever. And, you know, while the seizure itself wouldn't be seen to be, I guess, painful, if you can think about, particularly in some of those convulsive seizures, afterwards the person's exhausted. You know, they're actually really tired, they're exhausted, they're disoriented.
Now, in terms of, like, numbers and stats, does it affect more younger people, or is it one of those things that it just can affect everybody?
It can affect everybody, but if you were to chart the incidence, it's actually higher in the very young and the elderly.
Right, okay.
So certainly children and the elderly.
Right.
Is where the, you know, the highest peaks are in the incidence. But, you know, another condition or an accident, you know, bump to the head or something, at any time in life you could be diagnosed.
Okay. Now, in terms of if you were thinking you might have this, how do you get diagnosed? Do you go to your local GP first and they do tests and...
You would start with your GP, but diagnosis is very often done by a neurologist.
Right.
You know, so we would often say, you know, your neurologist is the person to speak to and perhaps even be referred to a specialist epileptologist.
Right.
And those people tend to be at the major hospitals, you know, where you have epilepsy clinics and neurology clinics, and they're the ones who really know about all the different syndromes. As I said, there are just so many forms of epilepsy that it's quite tricky for diagnosis.
Now, Purple Day's coming up. What's that all about?
Well, it's about raising awareness first and foremost, Ben. The size of the condition in Australia and worldwide is, you know, extraordinary. It's estimated that some 50 million people worldwide have epilepsy at any given time. So, you know, it's really a big problem. In Australia, probably around 800,000 people will be diagnosed at some stage in life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a small thing, and yet what we find is the awareness of epilepsy is still quite low, and the World Health Organization tells us that there's probably no condition more neglected in terms of awareness and funding and so on. And very, very importantly, there's actually still some social stigma and misconception. condition associated with epilepsy, which really makes it difficult, you know, for people that have the condition. So Purple Day is about trying to raise awareness and just have it as a conversation that people know that epilepsy exists and try to get some accurate messages out into the community about what it is and how to help.
There you have it. And of course, for more details, you can get behind this great cause. Just go to their telephone number, 1300 37 45 37, and get behind the wonderful Purple Day for epilepsy. For more details, go to mindfood.com.
Mind Food Radio, smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
We've got on the line with us today Sue Shepherd.
That's right, Dr. Sue Shepherd, who is a renowned dietitian who's worked in mainly in the gluten intolerance area, but she's written a book, a brand new book, about food allergies. Welcome to the show, Sue.
Thanks so much for having me, Michael and Ben.
Now, you've kind of taken all the time out of, you know, for us and the people who will read this book about all the different allergies and the allergy-free recipes that you now can kind of cook.
Yes, I've put together a cookbook that I'm immensely proud of. This is a collection of recipes where every single recipe is suitable for people with allergies to all of the known declared allergens. So that includes gluten and wheat, dairy, peanuts, tree nuts, which of course differ to peanuts, seeds, shellfish, seafood, soy, and egg. So it's a fabulous book which shows that you can still enjoy great tasting food.
Yeah.
Were all these food allergies and gluten intolerance things around, say, you know, in the early 1900s, and people just didn't know what they were?
Food allergies and intolerances are definitely on the rise. There's a few reasons for that. One is that we're better at diagnosing them and having tools to assist in the treatment of them, and that's particularly the case for food intolerances.
Yeah.
With allergies, for some unfortunate individuals, the allergies can be so serious that they can cause an anaphylactic reaction. Now, something like that is of course identified because that's life threatening. But allergies don't always appear in such a serious form. It can be in a milder way. And, you know, now that we, you know, certainly the medical professionals, the dietitians and other foodies and the general public themselves are so much more aware that there are these adverse reactions to food. They feel uncomfortable in an assortment of ways, whether it's stomach upsets and symptoms of an irritable bowel or rashes, migraines, sinus, and as I said, worst case, the airways closing over. And, you know, we're much better at going to the doctors to talk about it and having an action plan and having a route to diagnosing what's wrong.
Yeah.
One of the things to note is that a lot of allergies people can grow out of. It's not always something that is lifelong. Usually when an allergy develops in adulthood, it does usually stick with them. But in children, how long their allergy sticks with them can vary from child to child. But typically the allergies that are in children that continue through to later in life include allergies to peanuts, tree nuts, seeds and seafood. It's those four in particular that are usually, if you diagnose as a child, will continue through your
life.
Most of the other allergies diagnosed as a child will drop off as the child gets older, usually around school age.
Thanks, Sue. And look, for more allergy-free recipes, go to mindfood.com and also sign up to our daily recipe.
Thank you.
It's Mind Food Radio. Now, a very special interview. Have you heard of a not-for-profit called Purple Soup? I was just reading about this the other night, and this is a wonderful cause, a not-for-profit. It just won international award for its work with chronically ill children, and we have the director, Tim Matchington, on the line with us today. How are you, Tim?
I'm good, thank you. It's great to speak to you.
Nice to talk to you. Now, tell us about Purple Soup.
So Purple Soup is an organisation that I founded 10 years ago after travelling around the world extensively working with different kids who had a lot of different serious medical conditions. And when I returned to Australia, I saw there was an area that wasn't quite being fulfilled, and that was in the area of adventure therapy. So what that really means is we take amazing young children and their families who happen to be living with some very serious medical conditions on adventures that are not only fun and a great escape from their regular world, but are very meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is we do a lot of counselling in terms of talking about the hard stuff that these kids have to deal with every day, that unless we lived with that sort of stuff, we wouldn't understand.
Yeah, you say here, while many health professionals are often able to help with the medical side of things, it's the other side that also needs to be supported.
Yeah, a lot of the times the families we work with get limited limited contact with their medical professionals, which is great because they manage to tick all the boxes in terms of, for example, getting the medication regime right. But as things crop up from time to time, sometimes that can be, you know, in the middle of a month where they haven't got an appointment set until the next month. Crops up.
Yep.
And often those things can be around different things that come up for young people, like transitioning from primary school to secondary school. And the challenge that we all went through, we all probably had an awkward moment or two in our adolescence. But when you combine that with being chronically ill, those kids sometimes miss out on a lot of opportunities. For example, sport. They don't have often opportunity to do sport in a really meaningful way that they get a good sense of self-esteem. So some of the things they get to do on our camps, which are pretty zany places, give them the chance to discover a bigger sense of who they are.
Now, when you talk about a bigger sense of who they are, what happened for you that actually created all this? Like, what was the turning point?
It came about as a bit of a personal evolution, really. I embarked originally on a career to be a firefighter and decided that the firefighters have a really tough job. They often help people on the worst days of their lives, but they don't actually get to often see the bookend. The people, you know, get better or walk out of hospital. And one day I got involved in a small program as a volunteer firefighter to take a fire truck onto a camp that had had some kids there that were learning to give themselves needles for their diabetes.
Okay.
And it was an incredible place, and I instantly realised this is where I was best to be.
So you're a bit of a humanitarian. Do you reckon someone above had something to say in your destiny?
I certainly think that we find amazing people to be our facilitators in the soup, and we've never ever advertised for staff. In fact, people tend to find us, and I believe that we're a little bit led like that. I think things come together sometimes just at the right time at the right place, which is something we try to capitalise on. And even in our camps, when we see that a certain young person is becoming more and more stronger in themselves, we offer them opportunities to develop leadership skills and then come back as leaders in the soup. And we have some really good examples of some excellent young people who are now, you know, taking control of our camps.
It's really a calling that you've got, isn't it? It's quite fascinating.
It's definitely enveloped my life. I would call it a family in Purple Soup, and we're very proud of that. We still run out of a very small office, but we've been to 41 countries. Recently, just got back from some programs in Africa where we were working with kids in hospitals where four kids were sharing each hospital bed.
Now, Tim, if we're listening to the radio today, which we all are, and all ears are on you at the minute, what can we do to help you? What do you need, and how do we get involved?
Way to help us is to get our organisation to come and run an amazing team building event for your company or your workplace, and then we can send our qualified and amazing staff to go and work with some sick kids. It helps us to help them, and we come in at the same sort of financial price point as any other team building company. So purplesoup.org is our website. We'd love you to have a look at it. Comment on our Facebook page. We're looking to build an audience, but otherwise just looking to get some support just from the community.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
It's Mind Food Radio. Now time for Fashion on the Fields. We've got Carolyn Enting sitting over in New Zealand joining us now. How are you, Carolyn?
I'm fabulous, thank you.
I tell you what, you've got a great job flying around the world doing all this fashion and beauty stuff.
I know, it's not bad. It's not too shabby.
Tell me, what's happening in this issue coming up? You've been working on some really interesting stuff around the world of femininity.
Well, exactly. There's a whole new modern hard-edged look coming through. And, you know, a lot of fashion has been really caught up in a lot of, in recent years, of lovely, you know, peasant blouses and fluid lines and pretty frocks and florals. But it's a really new hard-edged look coming through. And women are sort of turning to this more. And so right now I'm kind of channeling that look, and I'm wearing quite a structured dress in black with a very kind of industrial zip.
Yes.
You'll notice that a lot of garments now are also wearing a lot of hardware on them.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Is this all part of this new wave, is it?
It is. So you might have noticed girls walking around with big spikes on their shoulders, like pyramids, cones.
I have.
Studs, or around their neckline, on their shoes, on their handbags. Actually, it could be quite a good self-defense handbag, couldn't it? If you got mic, you could swing your handbag around.
Exactly. But it's almost like, do you think it's just a fad, or do you think it's going to be around for quite a while, this new look?
Well, it's quite interesting because there are lots of different thoughts on it. Some people are sort of saying, you know, women are wanting a bit of a change, and people are getting really excited and saying this is actually a new look in fashion. You know, fashion's been very sort of derivative of, you know, the 80s and 90s of the last few seasons.
Yeah.
And in fact, last time we had a really big fashion movement, you know, of great change in fashion was in the 80s and 90s, and really since then nothing major has happened. And some people are now talking about modern femininity as being the new wave, just this whole new look. And, you know, I suppose Lady Gaga might have had something to do with it.
I think so.
The spiky stuff she's wearing and all that crazy stuff.
Now, tell me, but does it apply to men as well? Does this thing carry over to the guys, or is it only for the girls?
Well, to be honest, I think guys have been, you know, rocking out some of these looks as well. I think it does carry through. You know, British designer Gareth Pugh, he's sort of really been pushing this hard edge look for a while, and that's quite sort of strong. But it's really interesting because if you diffuse it back to the street, it can be a very wearable look. You know, you can have a tweed, you know, jacket, but then have these spikes around the collar. So it's you know, giving this, you know, old school styling a new edge.
Yeah, it is. And you're seeing a lot of that. Actually, I am seeing a lot of that where I'm teaching at the moment. So you sort of look at the students coming in and you think, wow, that's an interesting look. Thank God tattoos are out this term. I'm not seeing as many people with tattoos.
No. I mean, well, some people have been, you know, describing this look as a little bit punk, but then I think we shouldn't really use the word punk because then that's sort of derivative of something that's gone before. And if they want to sort of say this is a new thing, then, I mean, okay, sure, they did have those, you know, studded spiky collars back in the punk movement.
Yeah.
But this is almost like pretty punk in a way.
Pretty punk. Now, speaking of pretty punk, what sort of colours do we look at in this realm? It's not all black, is it?
Well, there is a lot of black, but no, there's not. I mean, I recently saw in a store a lovely peplum top. Now, peplums are sort of those sort of little flouncy things that come out from the side of the top and can give you a bit of shape. And it was white, and then it had these studs all around the neckline and gold.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually really rather beautiful. And if you wore that with a lovely pencil skirt and a pair of high heels, it's a stunning outfit.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to have to look out for this issue of Mind Food to see more of those happy snaps, hey?
Absolutely.
Fabulous. Well, Carolyn Enting, thank you very much for joining us. I know you're on deadline and, of course, being the associate editor sitting in New Zealand, you must be a busy girl. So thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Well, we've come to a time in the program that we love to talk about. I went for a 7K walk today before
the
show.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I did. And the wind was like gale force. I thought I was climbing the Himalayas.
Who has time for that?
Not many people.
No.
I did today.
You've really got to get a proper job.
No, I know. Well, I try to. I have to have a clear mind when I'm doing Mind Food.
Well, what I... yeah, working with me. So what I tend to do is I go to mindfood.com because there's lots of really good
big
exercises and things like that. But on today's show, we've got Jenny, who I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
At the start of this year, we did a health symposium, a Mind Food health symposium, and Jenny was our personal trainer, and she was absolutely fantastic. She gave us lots of different tips and ideas, and I thought, you know, with a different season, it's a whole different sort of kettle of fish. So I'd like to welcome to the show our personal trainer, Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
Hi there, Michael. Hi, Ben.
How are you? Are you in your leotard giving us this lecture today? No.
I love radio. Yes, I am.
So listen, as it's really cold and we don't really want to go outside, well, although Ben does, even in the rain, for a 7K walk, what can we be doing?
It's probably making that commitment first. A lot of it comes from the mind.
Yes.
You have to make an appointment in your diary to look after yourself.
Yeah.
So get a friend. If you've got time, whether you do something, you can go outside. Realistically, try and get some vitamin D. You know, if you can at lunchtime. I mean, that just lifts your mood and your spirit. Yes, of course, the weather's lousy, but not constantly.
No.
But, you know, little things, you know, go back to those old exercises, skipping ropes, dance videos. I know it sounds probably ridiculous, but you can have a bit of fun with it. You don't have to squat up and down off a chair and lunge, because realistically, people don't.
Yeah, no. Well, that's true.
You know, I don't. I find it hard to get motivated. Getting a Swiss ball, you know, something you can use as a seat, they're a fantastic books and internet sites for that. But you can do some really good back strengthening, core work. Try something different.
Yeah.
That's the lovely thing about winter. I go to stretch classes, yoga classes that I don't do in summer because the weather's so beautiful.
Mm.
And tell us, you know, when I know we talked off air how, you know, all of a sudden someone will come to you in November or December and say, I want a summer body.
Yeah.
And it's a little late. When is a good time? You know, I guess you can be training and get, you know, obviously keeping fit and exercise throughout the year.
Mm.
But when is a good idea or in the year to sort of kick that up and really get ready for summer?
Well, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but, you know, exercise has to be just a lifelong commitment through every season.
Well, it's interesting. An interview we did some months ago, it was with a doctor, and he'd written a book. I think it was all about keeping fit, but it was also from a mind perspective,
yeah.
You know, the power of your brain. And he said, look, to be really honest, he just wasn't into exercise at all, but he hired an exercycle and he put it in front of the TV and he'd watch his favourite TV show. It was West Wing. That would put me to sleep. But he, you know, he would put that on. And, you know, before you knew it, he had done his exercise each day. And he said, it's amazing. If you can make it fun and your mind can go somewhere else, before you know it, it's done.
And you sleep better.
Yeah, that's the big thing. You do sleep a lot better, don't you?
You do, Ben. It's fundamental.
Do you think, though, that we have to do, like years ago people didn't do all this exercise? Is it because we've become a lot more sedentary? Our jobs are now more sitting with computers and we're always, you know, sitting around. We really don't have to walk too far these days.
Oh, that's a given. My grandmother gave me such a hard time when I joined the gym at 18. You know, she just said we never had to do this.
No.
And that's my grandmother's and my mother's generation too, to be fair. It's our generation.
Mm.
But for the time being, you know, for those winter months, there are some great ideas. And as I say, if you just resource back to mindfood.com, think about doing some flexibility, think about doing some stretch. As simple as doing press-ups, and for new people, you can do press-ups against a wall standing up to get that strength and posture. And it goes, I could go on, you know, like Michael, I didn't give you back the microphone once I got a hold of it back.
I was just thinking Michael was doing that, getting into the studio today, leaning against the door, some push-ups.
Trying to breathe. Jenny, thank you so much, honey.
Thank you.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
Well, we've come to that time in the program, the My Story segment, and it's one that everybody loves to read about and hear about.
And so I'd like to welcome to today's show, Lucy Jones. Hi, Lucy.
Hi.
So you've got an extraordinary story that I know many listeners will get a lot from. You had a beautiful baby girl, Sienna. And at the age of 9 months, you took her to the doctor, and I'll let you pick up the story from there.
Yes, well, she was 9 months old, and she had a temperature, and like any first-time mother, I was slightly concerned, so I took her to the Sydney Children's Hospital. We'd only been in Australia about 7 weeks because we'd arrived from the UK, but a friend had said to me, if we ever had any concerns, to go to Sydney Children's Hospital. And the doctor there spent about an hour examining her, and they said to me and my partner, Oliver, that they thought her stomach was slightly bigger than it should be, and that they wanted to do more tests, etc. And then I was literally sitting in a hospital room when two doctors came in, and they said to me they had some very bad news for me, and that Sienna had a very large tumour in her abdomen, and that they couldn't tell me if it was benign or malignant, but just from the tone of their voice, I knew it was bad news, and it was very likely to be malignant. And the oncology team arrived shortly afterwards and told me they thought it was a children's cancer called neuroblastoma. And obviously we'd never heard of it, as a lot of people haven't. Mm. And they said it was, unfortunately, a difficult children's cancer, which existed in many different forms. And they'd have to do a biopsy and send it to the States for analysis to find out exactly what type of neuroblastoma it was. And we'd have to wait 2 weeks to find out. During that time, Sienna really deteriorated badly, and the tumour started growing very, very fast. It was already a large tumour. It was the size of like a grapefruit in her abdomen. And we had to start treatment before we got the results. And they believed it would be best to start with an intermediate risk type of treatment. So we started on that, and immediately the chemotherapy knocked the tumour back. And then we got the results back from the States, and unfortunately it was the very worst type of neuroblastoma. And we were told Sienna was high risk, and we'd have to change treatment to high risk treatment as well. The chemotherapy knocked back 5 out of the 6 tumours, but one of the tumours in the original site became chemo resistant. So it was very, very heartbreaking, but we couldn't stop it. And I was very heavily pregnant at the time with my second child. So we had a very traumatic 9 days in hospital where we were lying next to our daughter. And Jamie, my little boy, was in my tummy, alive and ready to come out to the world, and my little girl was literally dying next to me. So it was just one of those times where it was just so unbelievable what was happening in the worst possible kind. And when Jamie was born, he was born 5 days after Sienna passed, but I was actually having to do the funeral arrangements for my little girl, and Jamie came along to the funeral. And, you know, that's very sadly the only time he ever met his sister. So having been through all this experience, I've spent a lot of time with my friends trying to raise awareness and funds for neuroblastoma.
For anyone listening to this, you can go to ccia.org.au to make a donation. Simply fill out and return a form in there and you can donate. And Lucy, I'd like to thank you very much for telling us your story. I know a lot of our listeners at Mindfood Radio, it would have touched them. And thank you very much.
Well, thank you for listening and thank you for giving me time on your radio. I much appreciate it.
Welcome back to Mind Food. Time to chat with our food director, Michelle. You're standing in a corridor somewhere. Are you ready to roll?
Speaking of ready to roll, I am. I've got Pippi the dog out here, and that's exactly what she is doing. She's having a roll on the carpet.
Oh, as you do. What are we doing today in the kitchen area?
Well, I'm going to talk today. We've got a beautiful recipe in the issue, and it will be going online for the people that are getting ready for Easter. And this is to be made over the Easter weekend, and it's just a beautiful recipe. It's Easter cinnamon pull-apart bun.
Oh, yum. How do we do that? Is it hard to make?
You're going to be a goddess in the kitchen if you can make this one. It's working with yeast, so it's very easy. It's a nice, easy recipe, but you'll feel fabulous when you finish it.
Now, in terms of, it'll be in the magazine, what about if we wanted to do something a little bit more on the chocolate side? Is there anything you can give us in the advice on that front?
This one has chocolate on it, Ben, if you just wait.
I know. Well, we'll get to the chocolate Easter eggs in a minute, but keep going, yes. This one's got chocolate.
I thought I might tell you about, this one has chocolate. It's got a chocolate icing on the pull-apart bun. So once it's finished cooking and you've gone through the process of candying walnuts and making the dough and then sprinkling the dough with cinnamon and sugar, the rolling it up and baking them. And then the last thing is drizzle the whole thing with a nice white chocolate icing.
Oh, how beautiful.
Oh, it is beautiful.
How long does it take to prepare this?
It takes a little while because there's a lot of resting involved with the dough. And, even when you think you're finished, you've still got to rest it. And then finally, I think after two or three lots of resting, it's into the oven. And then it doesn't take long. And I can tell you what, I bet that after you finish eating them, you'll be back to that whole process again.
Well, so when it comes to this recipe that we're talking about today, it'll be available online. Can we get it on the iPad version as well?
Oh, yes. It's on the iPad that's up now.
Great.
So, the March iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll put together a collection as it gets close to Easter, some nice Easter baking on the site. So if you visit mindfood.com, there'll be an array of all sorts of delicious Easter goodies to make there.
Fantastic. And, of course, the weekly recipes or the daily recipes as well that go out. You can subscribe to those. So how do we get onto that list? What do we have to do?
Oh, get onto that list. It's just a matter of visiting mindfood.com and there's a prompt there and just following the prompt and entering your email address and you'll get a beautiful recipe. It's delivered right to your inbox every day. So we do have lots of fun with our recipes. Would you believe I'm organising the May recipes today? So we're talking about what we're going to do and we've got to sort of think about the seasons are getting cooler and what we want to be eating. So we've got some exciting things coming up.
Oh, that's good. So this winter, is it more soups, do you think, or not?
I think we're going to be seeing a lot more super grains this winter.
Oh, okay.
A lot more vegetarian and, meals that can be stretched from dinner tonight, lunch tomorrow.
Yep.
But a lot of home cooking. We've got some beautiful flavours coming through, and I'm looking at doing a few slow roasts, and we've got some nice venison recipes, and we've got lots of lovely things happening in the coming up issues.
Well, that's lovely. Now you can put your rabbit ears away and we'll talk next time.
Okay, thank you very much, Ben.
All right, there you have it. That's Michelle, our food director, talking to us about the wonderful world of Easter coming up. For more details, go to mindfood.com.
Well, that's the program, folks. Thank you for your company. Join us again next week right here on Mind Food Radio. Of course, you can check out the iPad version of the magazine by jumping into the iTunes store. And join us next week. We'll do it all again. Until then, have a safe week, won't you? And of course, if you missed anything today, just jump onto mindfood.com and click on the radio column.
Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking, was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington. Patrick K. Roos, Bogart Torelli speaking.